At Farmers Insurance, we know a roof can withstand a lot. One exception being an airborne car. Seen it, covered it. Click for more.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, exchanges and affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Want to rise above what holds you back? These are the stories of those fighting that battle. It might also be the story of you. I'm Dan Waldschmidt, author of Edgy Conversations and strategist to billion-dollar companies all over the world. This is Mark Menard, author of The Story of You, the guy who knows a thing or two about never giving up. You're listening to Elevating Beyond. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Elevating Beyond with a two-word mission statement, change lives. And we're getting into part two of this two-part series that we've done with Will Little. Now, if you haven't heard part one, go back and listen to it, because in part one, like, there was so much in there. That's why we broke it up. But Will Little talks about how he murdered someone and going through so much in his earlier life, the gang fights, the drug dealing, the fighting, the abuse, all the craziness at age 18, at age 19, being faced with life in prison, and then getting sentenced from 10 to 20 years in prison. And where we left it off is when he started, while in prison, to decide to start really making a change and how he went about it. So I'm going to let it play and sit back and listen.
I just got to say real quick, there's so many powerful things here, but just something that jumped out. I love how, because, like, I've always had introspective and, like, studied the environment and people and thought about myself. And that's, and some of that also, I think, is, like, how you learn to, like, survive and adapt to the different environments that you were in. The way you were, so, like, people that are intelligent, I think a lot of times are more quiet because they're thinking about stuff more differently than other people. Like, I would kind of be like looking at each environment, like studying, okay, what do I need to do to make it through this? And, but then you apply that same, really kind of the same thing that you were doing on the streets and stuff, but in, like, using those powers for good, like that self-awareness. And you started, like, teaching your, you started realizing, okay, I'm going to need to have, like, these skills and be better here socially. And like you said, the best teachers, like, are experiments. And also you knew, I'm going to have to know how to do it in this environment. Because, you know, just because you're out of prison, you're still can be back around the same type crowd, and you have to learn how to overcome that. I just think that the fact that you, it's amazing how everyone, you know, and everyone, that's the way we're made. Like, we each learn our own way, but go ahead. So you said then you like in your 20s, you kind of started applying this, or?
Yeah. I started applying it, and then, you know, I knew it would be very hard. I already knew it would be a very hard transformation because I was still in the same environment, still dealing with the same mentalities of people. And believe me, it was challenging because I did get into some more altercation after that. But I learned how to really approach the situation differently. And normally I just react and respond to, because I get angry real quick when people disrespect me or try to violate some kind of way. But I've learned how to just try to communicate with people and have a level of empathy at the time to understand why they were angry. You know, because most of the times when I realized that people weren't really angry at you, they were angry at their situation that needed an outlet. You know?
That's right.
And you became that outlet for them. So I was no longer allowing people to control my emotions or my environment to control my emotions. I was going to be totally controlling my emotions and my feelings and how I respond to certain things, because we can't change the experience, but we can change how we feel about the experience. You know, so I understood that at a young age, and I started growing, and I see things start working. for me. And once I was sentenced 2 years later, I was sent upstate to another maximum security prison, a bigger prison. And now I'm able to settle down and I'm able to really embody the things that I'm learning and the words that I'm learning and looking at patience and looking at forbearance, looking at strength, you know, and really empowering these words. Like one of my favorite quotes is "Where the world is a way." And just using that quote and say, all right, whatever challenge I face, I know I'm going to face many challenges because I'm coming into something new I never experienced before of being in prison and stuff like that, and different prisons and meeting different people, and maybe have some enemies in jail that I don't know about, you know? So I know I had to really figure out and use my God-given gift, which is my brain, to help me navigate my way through the system. And once I'm getting through the system, to get out of the system and stay out of the system too as well, because I had to learn the system.
Yeah.
You know, so I knew I would be on parole for 10 years once I got out, but that's something I never experienced either. I know a lot of guys come back to jail. I mean, 70% of the guys that go out, that leave prison, come back to prison within 6 months to 3 years.
Yeah.
I'm witnessing this all the time. So if you're witnessing and seeing it, you think you have no chance. And most guys think they have a chance. Because most likely they wasn't getting hired for no jobs, or they were saying the halfway house was setting them up, or they were saying that my girl, my big mom needed clothes, needed money, I had to take up responsibilities when I got home, and I ain't hustling no more, and just put them under pressures that, you know, forced them to go back and to revert to the same behaviors they had before, you know? And to me, it was like just analyzing that whole aspect of their thinking. How I was going to take that and how I was going to use it against myself to better myself. I mean, once I got out of prison, you know, so I would learn how to master the prison and being inside there and dealing with people, individuals, and the system and working and things in that nature and correcting my flaws and strengthening my areas of weakness. But now I'm setting myself up for another challenge once I get out of prison.
Yeah.
I'm not only a man, but I'm a father too as well, you know? So it was just a challenge. So I already accepted challenges. And if people don't accept challenges, and a lot of times we get caught up in what we experience and going through and think that we're the only ones going through it.
That's right.
And think that why this happened to me all the time, consistently happened to me. And I just look at it as a point of building the stress. I pray for becoming a man. I pray to be a better person. And the only way I'm going to do that is if I go through these trials and tribulations that allow me to strengthen the areas of weaknesses within myself. Now, I accepted that. I mean, so when things came my way, you know, I just looked at it, all right, well, the world is the way. I'm gonna go through it. I'm gonna learn from it. And I'm gonna benefit from it. And that's what I've been doing ever since my transformation, you know.
Did you meet anyone while you were in prison that you had that was like any type of positive mentor that was there at all? Or did you mostly just keep learning this yourself and kind of like, was there anyone that helped give any good advice or?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of guys in there, older guys who've been in there since they were teenagers themselves, that had life in prison and realized they made mistakes and stuff like that and wish they could get back in time or change their life around. So me even just talking to those guys, I hung around older guys. I started hanging around my friends who are my age when I started wanting to transform my life, and guys I knew from in the streets that we used to hang out together on the streets. So I started really hanging around with them all the time and started hanging around with older guys who had some kind of wisdom.
Yes.
You know, and from a longer experience in prison. And I started sitting and talking to different ones, not just one particular, but one guy in particular. I mentioned him in my book, my autobiography, which is a brother who was in jail since he was 16. And me and him, when I went upstate to state to serve my time, me and him connected, you know, and me just watching him showed how humble he was, you know, and he was a teacher, so he was teaching us about manhood, about spirituality, and things of that nature, you know. And he seen that I was hungry and I was eager to learn, so he really took me on his wing and he really started teaching me. Because I only had like a year to do in that prison, and they was going to ship me out to another prison, which I was going to do the remainder of my time, which was like 7 years. I think I had like 7 years left at that time.
Wow.
So I had to get as much information from him as possible, because there's a lot of older guys there who were still trying to be young, who really didn't learn it from experience. But the guys who did and wanted to get back and had that kind of compassion and empathy, and also just know that it's needed for our younger generation, I clung to those kind of guys as much as I could. And then once I left there, I was kind of equipped enough to go to the other prison and teach other young men who were coming in jail 18, 19 years old, like I was when I first came in, you know.
Wow.
And I started leading those guys. So,
so you started doing what you're doing now, and you went from being the student to the teacher. That's amazing. And then, so when you got out of prison, Will, like you did you have to start separating yourselves too from, did some of your old friends and stuff try to reconnect with you? Cause I know sometimes when you go through a lot of those things with people, like you can have these tight bonds. Did they try to reconnect, and did you have to just, like, how did you deal with that when you got out?
Yeah, I mean, I reconnected with them because I wanted to see them too. I mean, they're my brothers.
Sure.
Went through a whole lot as kids growing up, so I was connected to them still. But at the same time, that I wasn't going to stay the course.
That's right.
Still selling drugs. Someone was still getting high, you know, and I just knew, even me, even they could say, even me as a young kid, us being together as young kids, I always did my own thing. I never was a follower, you know. So I always was like a leader type, period. And for them to even know and see, like, they heard about me in jail. They heard about the things I was doing. People come home and say, yo, Will, they doing this, he's doing this, these young brothers. So they knew what stuff I was doing. They already knew my vibe was.
Okay.
Come home, you know, it was happy, stuff like that. And they offered me drugs, you know, to get money, get back on track.
Sure.
A lot of guys come home from jail and want to do the right thing, but wind up saying, all right, I'm going to hustle for a little bit and then get back, and then get back and doing the right thing. But for me, I knew that was a no-no. Like, anything I did that was negative, I was like, I ain't even chancing it. I ain't trying it because I know where it's going to take me. I want to explore the path that I've never been on before and see where it takes me, you know? So a lot of them, they didn't have no influence over me. Like, I never got high. All my friends got high. I never got high when I was a kid. So they already knew I was strong-willed. You know, I was strong-minded already. So they couldn't influence me to do anything that I didn't want to do.
Okay.
So even though we still close today. They see the work I'm doing. They love the work I'm doing.
That's cool.
Two of them is in my documentary. Two of them in the documentary that we have coming out this summer that they're doing, they did it for me. And I'm interested to see what they're saying, what their perspective of is of me from a kid to now, an adult.
So you have, so with your autobiography, did that, when did you, like, how long after you were out did you start writing that? And then how did you get connected where you started doing, you know, like the TEDx talk I saw where you're doing like motivational poetry and stuff too?
Right. Well, see, I was writing poetry. Well, I was writing raps when I was younger. In the streets, and most of the raps reflected my lifestyle, drugs and hustling and guns and stuff like that. So as I got educated, I started educating myself in prison. I started writing in my truth, you know, started really writing what I felt and what I experienced and things of that nature. So it became like spoken word. And I'm good with writing. My penmanship was really good because I used to be a graffiti writer on the street.
Yeah, yeah. That's art, though. That's art.
It allowed me. Yeah, it's art. So that allowed me to, you know, write real good. My commission was real good. So I started writing poems in prison for guys, for their wives, for their children, birthdays, and stuff like that. So when I started reciting it and speaking it, a lot of guys gravitated towards it even more so because the truth was real. And when I came home, I was trying to look for areas of work and what could I do as for work. And hopefully, I mean, gratefully that my cousin worked at this warehouse and she got me a job there. And I started working at this warehouse first, but I knew that it wasn't a place I wanted to be at for a while because it was just something inside me saying I need to be doing something different. I need to be going back to the community. I need to be working with the youth and teaching us in our community how to live life. You know, so that job was kind of in the way of my purpose. And eventually I got fed up with it, tired of it, and I left it. I left the job. And when I left it, I was leaving to go to another job, but the other job didn't. They hired me and fired me because they got my background check like 2 weeks later. They seen that I was locked up for homicide, you know, so they had to let me go. And I knew that was a problem. It was going to be a problem. But I had an interview with him. I told him about the case and everything else. But my supervisor's name, they ain't messing about it. They had no problems about it. I had experience working in the warehouse. So I was good on that aspect of it. So I was really happy and excited about that. So, but it was purposeful because the fact that when they fired me, it was a trial for me to say, all right, what am I going to do? I'm going to go back to hustling or I'm going to go try to find another job some kind of way and to make money to pay my bills. I had another son at the time, too, so I had two sons.
Yeah.
And I had a house, I had a car, you know, yeah, so like these are pressures that go like under your skin. And where it's like, all right, what can I do now? I know the easy way is to hustle and make money, but do I really want to go back and take that risk? And I really don't. So I want my son to see me in their life. So the thing was that I wound up sticking it out, having patience as much as I could, and then I wound up getting a job at the barbershop on the corner of my block. And I learned how to cut hair right there. You know, it just came, a door opened for me. And I took the opportunity, and the owner said, well, I'll teach you how to cut. And other guys and then other barbers said, I'll teach you how to cut. Well, don't worry about it, you'll be all right. So I started cutting and learned how to cut. I messed a few heads up at first, you know. I was patient, and it got me connected with the community. And then I started talking to young guys, young kids in there, and adults in there about this problem, the issues they had. And I became like a psychiatrist in the community, you know. And then I started, you know, mentoring, you know, and with the city of Philadelphia, like different programs in the city.
That's cool.
I got plenty of write-ups in the paper for my work I was doing in the community. I got citations from the governor, from the mayors in the city. And I just became, you know, popular, basically, for the work that I was doing and the transition I made in my life and helping other people actually navigate their way through some of the trials and tribulations that we going through, you know? Because there's a lot of hurt people here, you know, a lot of murders here, murders in Philadelphia. So a lot of people are hurt, lost children and lost loved ones and brothers and sisters, or just going through other trials and tribulations, can't get jobs or dealing with some other, you know, generational issues they may have, family issues.
Yeah.
They just don't know how to deal with it. So committing suicide and killing as a way of, you know, dealing with their own peers, depression, or taking drugs at a heavy rate and self-medicating. You know, all those different things dealing with, you know, the problems of the day. And I just want to teach people how to deal with their problems, how to cope with their problems, to become the best version of themselves, you know, without using all those particular outlets, those negative outlets, you know. So that's what I've been doing. You know, I got to TEDx. I got with Tim Rhodes. Tim Rhodes is the guy that I met about 2 years ago. Awesome guy out of California. He's doing great work in Cali now on the East Coast, West Coast and East Coast. And I happened to go to invite, I was invited to a house gathering where he was there speaking about One Life Fully Lived community. And One Life Fully Lived is like a conference they do on the West Coast and East Coast. And it's mainly a lot of millionaires who indulge in real estate, but people from all walks of life. And they really help each other grow and learn and actually make the best, you know, of themselves, you know, their business, or they want to support different businesses, entrepreneurship. There are many masters of different areas in life that will help each other and teach each other how to become the best you, you know. And when I met him and told him my story, he was like, wow. He said, would you speak at my conference?
That's
like,
awesome.
First time I ever was invited to speak at a conference. So I was like, yes, I'll speak at I'd love to speak there. You know, so me and him connected, and we grew this relationship, you know, and bonded. And, you know, he's been introducing me to a lot of people all over the country who love my story. And I've been going with him on his journey. We created a thing called Dare to Dream. Dare to Dream, One Life Fully Lived. And it's really about helping the youth discover, dream, plan, and live their life and discover their best life at a young age. So when they get adults, you know, once they leave out of high school, they know where they want to go to college, they want to take a trade, or when they want to be entrepreneurs, and how to actually align themselves with them, with them goals. You know, so we went to New York to do the public publicity summit. A young lady named Jane Groover is a good friend of mine here in Philadelphia, entrepreneur, a speaker, well, a great speaker. And she invited us there to go to the publicity summit in New York back in October. It's like September, October, November. And when I went there, we did like an elevator pitch about Daily Dream. Me and Tim did. He's from California, from Philadelphia. He's older.
Yeah.
White guy, white male, and I'm younger, black guy. And they wondered how we got together. And doing the work that we're doing. And then I ran to Ajit, who runs the TEDx here in Wilmington. And we pitched to him. He was like, yo, I gotta have my show.
So that's said, awesome.
So I got at least like next month. And I was like, next month? Like, yeah, can you do it? I was like, I can do it. It's almost a challenge, so I could So it was. I was trying to get on TEDx for 3 years, right? So it was like, wow, I was excited about it.
That's huge.
At the same time, I don't write my speeches.
Yeah.
I don't write any of my speeches now. So now I had to write a speech. I had to videotape it, send out to them. And I said, okay, I'm up for the challenge. You know, I can do that. I can put a video together, talk about what I want to talk about. And then actually, I have a good memory. So I'm not afraid of memorizing anything. I memorize poems all the time. I write poems all the time. So my memory is really strong.
Okay.
So me memorizing speech is really is easy for me. But the reason why I don't write speech is because my audience is different. It's young people. It's older people. It's inmates. They're inmates. There are people when it comes to community events. It's the senior citizens. So my speech is always different. I always like to feel the room when I'm
That's right.
To know what I want to think that would resonate with that crowd. But I want to service them.
That's right.
I want to give them the right speech.
Yeah, a lot of people don't do that.
I'm still a white person.
No, it's important. I just was talking about that a lot. You got to be able to adapt. Like, I'll have different things that I write that may be like a topic they want, but you always need to, like, I'll look, okay, is this, you need to make sure you're connecting with each person in the audience. I know some people that only can go off like a memorized speech, and the second they have to, they start doing terrible. But if you don't have that vibe to like start reading the room and, like you said, adapt and really just start having a conversation, I think that's the difference between a leader and just a speaker, as to where why you're more of a leader, because it's about connecting with people at whatever level that they're at and starting to, you know, help speak to them from where they are. And that's the TEDx, I know, could be tricky because it's, what is it, like 14 minutes or something like that? I know they have a tight time frame.
Yeah, 15 minutes it depends on, not 15 minutes, but they give me 18 minutes.
18, yeah, I think that's the magic number, 18.
Yeah.
that's great, that's awesome. So what led you to starting to get... like what you're working on now with the documentary where HBO, you said HBO is having some interest in it, you know, and we're waiting to see when that's going to come out and who's going to pick that up. Is that going with your autobiography that's a book that's going with that, or are you focusing more on the movie or both?
Yeah, well, actually, the documentary is produced from Portland, Oregon. So they have documentaries already out on Netflix right now. And they want to do a documentary on Deion and Willie. So I met the producer named Heidi Human about 4 years ago. And she was intrigued by my story from someone else. She connected with someone else who, well, actually I met in Washington. I spoke in Washington, in Washington Monument. I spoke there about violence. It may have been then, but then she reached out to me 2 years later about the documentary she was doing, and she thought that I would be a good person to interview about the documentary. So we went for it, and the other producer came out along with a guy named Sky, and he liked my interview. So he's like, "We gotta have you on our documentary." So I was like, "Great, no problem." So we filmed it last summer. They're doing the editing process now. It should be almost finished editing, and then once the editing process comes out, they're gonna send it to me so I can check it out, look at it. It was me, but it's me and three other individuals who are telling our stories.
Yeah.
I'm the only one from Philly. I'm the only African American that's on the document.
Okay.
They're very professional. I like their work. I've seen some of their work before. They're very professional. So once you give it out to me, then they're going to put it in the film festival, like they normally do it. They know the routine. Go to the film festival, then maybe sell it to Netflix or HBO or Showtime. And then it'll be put on one of those major networks, and then we'll see we'll see it then. The population of the world will see it then.
That's phenomenal.
Telling my story. It gave me an opportunity to promote my book as well, and my talks, and my speaking engagements and stuff like that. So I'm excited about that as well.
Yeah, and let's let everyone know that, and I'll make sure that it's all in the show notes too. But if you want to let everyone know where they can start connecting with you now, and is your book Beyond the Bullet, is it ready to order now, or is that all coming out at the same time?
Well, my book is called Inner City Youth.
Inner City Youth.
Letter I, letter C, letter Y. So that's the name of my book, Inner City Youth, on Amazon, under Will Little, under my name.
And that's out right now to order, right?
Awesome.
It's out right now. So the documentary is called Beyond the Bullet, and that'll probably be out for the summertime or sometime in the fall or winter. I'm not sure of this year.
So okay.
It's up to the producers when they're ready to put it out. But if they want to book me to speak, you can actually find me on my webpage, which is www.willvictorlittle.com, or you can email me at littwillie, littwillie, at aol.com. Or you can find me on Facebook under Will Latif, Latif Little.
Perfect.
Connect there, and then go from there.
Perfect. And everyone listening, we'll have all this in the show notes, including a direct link to your book that's on Amazon. And, you know, everyone listening, like, this is the story behind the story. We'll look forward to continuing to follow Will as your documentary is coming out. That's exciting. Like, I believe it will be on HBO. It's definitely going to keep elevating on Netflix, and we'll continue to see you everywhere. We have a lot of guests that have done that. Then we have them back on like after a year or two. And it's so awesome to see like the aftermath of them continuing to go exactly where they're seeing that vision taking them. And then talking about that, what's next, you know, and this is powerful. And I know it's going to be in your book and people need to read it now, but are you and you and your son pretty connected now?
Yes, we're definitely connected. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Showing him the way. Showing all the things I'm going to. And the thing is, the beautiful thing about, I had three sons.
Oh, nice.
My oldest son, when he first read the book, my oldest son, he didn't believe that was my life. And to me, it was more so refreshing because the fact that he couldn't see that in me. It shows that I have changed the whole life. You know what I'm saying? My character and stuff like that. So that is the beauty in it. But now he's older. He's 28 now. So
yeah,
he's older. So and his parents, now he has someone to relate to and connect to. And I always share the stories with them as me being their father for them, and me not having a father, you know, in my life, and just seeing like, you know, the benefits of having a father. You know, somebody who was hip, who was wise, who was from the streets. You know, who know everything that everybody run into, every pair of person.
Yeah.
Everything they run into, and help them able to navigate their way.
Absolutely.
So they won't make the same mistakes about me as a kid. You know?
Yeah, plus you can be on to them if they're trying to get away with crap. You'd be like, no way, you're not. I know what you're doing. You can't get that past me.
Right.
No, but you do. I mean, you change the whole legacy of your bloodline by what you've been doing, because now your boys have a role model in their life. That's that man, you know, and plus they were able to see the adversity that you've been through and have overcome. And it's great that they don't see that in you now, but also, you know, if anything does happen to them, then they're in life, then they're going to know that you can continue to overcome it and persevere through it. Like, because if anyone, you know, your story is a true story, that when someone comes in with a victim mindset and says it's impossible to do anything and you're always stuck in the system, you know, your story's proof that it's really not. It's you never anywhere said it was easy, but like you said, with willpower. And man, just I love what you're, I respect like every guest we have. I know that's why Karen continues to bring awesome people like you to Elevating Beyond. It's always great people like you that have overcome and then continue to pour back into others. I mean, I know you're pouring a lot into the youth, but I believe your story is going to be not just compelling, but help a lot of people at all different ages. I could see your speaking being very, very powerful. So I want to give a special thank you to Karen and always Internet Valet for continuing to send us amazing guests like we have here, Will Latif Little. And we'll throw everything on there. But thank you so much, Will, for coming on here today on Elevating Beyond and sharing your story behind the story. And everyone, you need to get his book. We'll have a link for Amazon. Look for his documentary coming out. I will keep you guys tuned on that. But you've heard his amazing story behind the story. And thank you so much, Will, for being with us today, my man.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Look, everyone, I told you this was some deep stuff. Like, we could have gone on for another 2 hours and continued to talk, because I mentioned this before, like, this is one of the few times on an interview that I pretty much was speechless. I didn't really know where to cut in and direct it, because everything was so heavy and powerful. I just needed this story to be shared. And so much respect for Will Little for opening up and sharing it. And he's continuing to do what is best. The best way to heal is to continue to use it. That adversity, that's what it's all about in Elevating Beyond, is to help others. And he's speaking, he's writing books. He has the HBO documentary coming out. He's working with a youth. And there's also, we were talking off air after the show. We talked for a little while. Will Little, Mark the producer, myself, we just sat and we talked for a little while. And Will Little let us know also, and we didn't mention this on the episode, but if you jump on YouTube and look up The Power of Forgiveness, the South Philly story, you'll see, like, it. He said it went viral. It's talking about he actually went and talked to the brother of the man that he killed years later and asked for his forgiveness. And that powerful testimony is recorded. It's filmed. They put it on YouTube. So go check that out. And there's so many takeaways here. We broke this in two parts, but what some of the main things I got was, number one, he talked about, which was just on YouTube, was the power of forgiveness, the power of asking for forgiveness, being willing to change, and then applying it into your actions. And like he did, he sought the brother out. He asked for his forgiveness. He went for it. He forgave himself. And then he started, one of the things you do with this adversity is you start pouring it into others. You start helping others more through what you've been through, so you can transform that adversity into changing lives for others. The other thing is that self-awareness, that introspection, and learn the way that you learn. He said he wasn't reading a bunch of books, but what his power, he had the power of observation, and he started to observe the way other people were coming in and out of prison. They would leave and come right back. And he started thinking, what makes them come back versus like the 2% that don't come back? And he started studying those differences and realizing and learning what he needed to do to change his life for when he got out of prison. And the third one is, you need to not wait for your circumstances or your environment to change, because a lot of times that's not what's going to happen. You need to learn to change yourself in the environment that you're in, to change your mindset, and the circumstances will follow. And that's exactly what Will Little did. He said, I had to learn how to change while I was in prison. I had to learn how to control my anger while I was in prison, not just when I got out, because I knew if I didn't have it controlled now, I wouldn't be able to control it while I got out. So change your mindset and the circumstances will follow. Continue to turn that adversity into changing lives forever, and never settle, never give up, and keep elevating beyond.
Get to Old Navy for Star Spangled Style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.